Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for February 27th, 2020. I'll be talking about a very interesting juxtaposition of provinces, states, counties, etc. in this Western Hemisphere that we live in. It looks like people are jumping ship in a serious way. I mean, there's referendums now in Alberta, and I believe Saskatchewan, Alberta for sure, where they're talking about leaving the Canadian hierarchy. And it's all over the liberal control that comes out of the eastern part of the country from the big cities, basically. And the same thing is going on. I'll be talking about cities, counties, etc. Also an update on the coronavirus. Also an update on water filtration, and just a quick mention, I'll talk more about this, but as far as gravity filters are concerned, and you're going to start to see this, I mentioned this before, but it's getting more and more difficult to get the stainless steel containers. We are not going to get the full-size kitchen stainless steel containers again, as far as I can tell. Maybe in the future we will, but the only ones we have right now in stock, and we're going to apparently continue to get, are the Traveler. It's just a little smaller. It's like 1 inch shorter, and it's a half inch less in diameter. So it's just about the same size. The good thing about it is it fits under your cupboards in the kitchen. So like if you do what I do, you put it on a little towel, like a terry cloth towel, and you can slide it back and forth on your countertop, and then so you can push it out of the way, and when you need it, you bring it forward and get the water out and then push it back again. And it's very easy to move, and when you want to service it, put water in, etc. Same thing, you just bring it forward, and you can slide it. You don't have to pick it up if you put it on like a little terry cloth, like a washcloth. But anyway, so what I'm turning my attention to are the above sink and the under sink water filters. And so now I have a new model also of the under sink, which has two canisters, two filters, and it's a two-stage, so you get a higher flow rate. The one canister is a little bit lower flow rate, but in the kitchen, you want good filtration for your water, so that's therefore why we have the two-container filter instead of one, with two filter elements, instead of one. And so anyway, but I encourage you, like recently, a lot of people have been buying filter elements, replacement for the stainless steel container. So a lot of people out there have the stainless containers. And so if you have any other brand, make, model, all of those stainless containers basically have the same hole pattern in the top container where you put the water. And they will take my filter elements. My filter elements are the best on the planet. You do not need add-on filters to take out chlorine and arsenic like all the rest do. So at any rate, that's just a comment. I'll be giving a little bit more detail later on in the show. But first of all, let me jump into this topic. Alberta, I've seen the news announcements, and they're just in the last couple of days. They are serious. They're telling basically the East Coast of Canada, either stop messing with us, and they've actually passed laws that make it unconstitutional for the East to charge carbon tax. Now, Canada is in the world agreement, and you would be seeing this in the United States right now. If Hillary Clinton had won, you would be have a very oppressive carbon tax on you. And the trade agreement, it's not a trade agreement, it's like the climate change agreement or accord, as it's called. Climate change accord, I think, is the complete proper name. Here's the problem. They were going to tax the United States out of existence, move the money to India and China, and then India and China could continue to pollute unabated. China is opening up a new coal plant, they say, every day to meet its just insatiable need for electricity to fuel its giant economy. But it's polluting electricity, but the whole issue with the carbon tax is they're taxing Canada. So the federal government there, they jumped all over this climate accord agreement. And, of course, Trudeau is a New World Order pawn. He fits right in, you know, that's who he is. So at any rate, the idea there is that the Western provinces are getting this very heavy-duty carbon tax, and they're saying no. And so they actually took it to court. The court, the local district court, ruled 4-1 that the carbon tax was unconstitutional. The federal government of Canada, they say, does not have the authority to tax on carbon emissions. So at any rate, that's going on right now. And so the Western provinces are just saying, okay, look, you can pass all the laws you want, and if you continue to do it, we're out of here. Adios, amigo. And so at any rate, looking also at, say, Virginia. Virginia is run by Democrats from Washington, D.C. that live in Richmond. So they come across, they work in D.C., they're liberals, they're in the basically the liberal deep state swamp of Washington. They come across the border to live in Virginia, so they're not original Virginia residents. 99.9% of them, they're from all over the place. They congregate there, and they can come across and live in this beautiful state of Virginia and pay lower prices for housing, etc. So they commute every day into D.C. and come home, and then they are influencing the state of government of Virginia. And the people there want out. And so there are a lot of the counties in Virginia, they've been invited to move into the state of West Virginia. West Virginia is saying, you're not going to get that kind of treatment over here. So very interesting, because West Virginia, of course, is a coal mining state. It's a hard worker, blue collar state. And they value the common person. That's just, you know, the average guy making a living, wants his raise his family, buy his Chevrolet pickup truck, or his Dodge pickup truck, and just a good old hometown boy and the family, and that's what they want there. The women, they just want, you know, a nice lifestyle. They grew up there, they liked it, but they don't want somebody coming in telling them how to run their ship, and besides charging them a lot of money for the benefit of having all these people tell them what to do. There are other states trying to make major cities become states. For example, Illinois. There's a movement afoot to make the Cook County and Chicago a separate state because it's just dragging down the rest of the state. When I did my voter fraud study that was originally in 2016 before the presidential election. Then I did it and completed it in January after the 2016 election. I used actual voting statistical numbers. I showed conclusively that the cities dominated the voting for the blue or Democratic ticket, and the rural areas dominated, like 95% to 5% dominated the voting for the Republican side. And in a lot of cases, if you look at, you just go right down the state one after the other, the voting was carried, let's say Nevada or Colorado. Colorado was carried by the voting from Denver. If you looked in Texas, the voting was carried by the cities, Houston, Dallas, and Fort Worth, and other big cities like Austin, etc., where there's a very huge liberal population, and what I determined was actual cheating by the Democrats in those areas to raise the vote count, because I describe it in the voter study. But the point is that if you look at metropolitan areas, that's where the liberal bases exist, and they're usually enough to dominate the entire state and population. In other words, the outlying areas have maybe more or less equal population, or maybe slightly less. Let's take another state like Minnesota, where Minneapolis carried the state for Hillary Clinton, Democrat, and the entire rest of the state was red. So if you live out in the country, basically your vote is being negated over and over, and in a lot of cases by basically illegal votes. The absentee ballots, the mail-in ballots, that they stuff the ballot box with those. And remember, that's what the voter get out and vote registration thing is all about. They go door to door canvassing, and then they take the people who have moved away, that they now know have moved away, and they send in a remote ballot for them, a mail-in ballot, an absentee ballot, and that gets counted into the vote, and there's no checks or balances on this. And of course, the voting machines are also in the cities. So there's rampant, absolutely rampant voter cheating going on in the cities. So it gives this illusion that there's some kind of balance in the United States between Democrats and Republicans, and there's not. It's my estimation that in California, there has not been a fair election in some districts ever, that the people in Congress or in the House of Representatives from those districts never have won a fair election in their entire career as senators or House of Representative congressmen. So anyway, the people are starting to rebel against this control from the cities. There's a movement also in Denver to divide that off, Denver off into another, like its own entity, another state, because of the discrepancy between the belief systems and the cultural values, etc., and the economic values of the people who live outlying and the people who live in the cities. So the movement is for local control, and this is coming from a lot of other, sources. Let's just put it that way. But this is an interesting comment. This is an interesting comment from myself. And, of course, I'm a Christian, raised a Christian, and Irish, you know, a little bit stubborn, possibly. But the interesting thing about Christianity, and this is what has goaded the politicians since Christ walked on the planet, is that it's not about politics. It's not about the group. It's not about socialism. It's not about a group mentality of everybody contribute for the common good. It's none of those. It's not about democracy. It's not about voting or it's not about a republic. It's not about anything like that at all. It's simply about the individual. So it breaks it down to the most rudimentary component of our society, and that is the individual. And that is what drives people in power crazy, absolutely out of their wall bonkers, because they want everybody to look at them as the person in charge. Oh, we gotta listen to what Trump says today about the coronavirus. Well, let me tell you something. And quite frankly, we're very lucky to have Trump as president, by the way, simply in regards to this coronavirus. Bernie would go, we got to open up the borders. We can't limit the crossing of border from China. All those people have rights. All those people can come into this country, and we can't. It would be to close off people with a life-threatening disease that could cause a pandemic would be racist. We can't do that. Oh my goodness. No, it's not about race. It came from China. We don't know where it started, who started. May have been our very own CIA that planted it there. We don't know. Nobody knows. You can only speculate. It may have come from a Chinese lab The one thing that's clear is this is a military virus. Some people say, it's no more deadly than the flu. From the reports that have come out relative to people getting this bug, this virus, the novel coronavirus, which they keep calling that, it's like you just cough and cough. You can't stop coughing. And the people that make it through are, you know, here's the other thing. If you get this thing, you don't know when you're going to be cured or if you're going to have this virus or if it's, is this recurring. It's too early to tell. But this is a military-grade virus from a military-grade laboratory. And the United States was cooperating with China. American scientists were flying into that Class 4, Level 4 bio lab right there in Wuhan or whatever it's called. This region where all of this allegedly began. So, but anyway, back, I diverge from my, I deviate from my concept there. But Christianity is about the individual, nothing more. It's not about Caesar. It's not about the president. It's not about the United States. It's not about make America great again. It's not about anything. It's about the individual. And the individual has to take responsibility because we have all of these rights. We have all of these tremendous gifts bestowed on us by as human beings. But you have to also take responsibility for this. It's just not a free-for-all. It's not like, you know, diversity, everybody's in, it doesn't matter. You know, no, it's not like that. It's simply about personal responsibility for the individual. And like I say, that absolutely drives people in power bonkers. You look at the last things that happened to Christ before the crucifixion. He threw the money changers out of the temple. That was not a politically correct thing to do. He gave a sermon on the mount, and all the people were walking off of their jobs. And what does he do? He comes out, and the little kid has a basket of bread and fish, and he says, start handing it. And these are, like, who knows, 10,000 people out, 20,000. You know, he's drawing big crowds of people, and people are walking off their jobs. And all of a sudden, you know, they're out there with nothing to eat, and he takes this one basket of fish and bread and feeds the whole multitude of people. And so they're going, well, you know, I'm going to show up here tomorrow. This was probably one of the better meals that most of these people had had in a long time. You know, and so here's this guy telling you, hey, don't worry, the birds in the trees, the birds of the air, don't worry about where they're going to eat tomorrow. Why should you? God's going to take care of you. That's not exactly the kind of message that brings amorous feelings from the powers that be. That's not the kind of message that they want going out to the public. Like, hey, leave your job. You don't have to stop paying your house payment. Stop paying your insurance. You know, what if there was a candidate for president that went out and said, instead of we got to tax you for more, that's Bernie. You know, we're going to pay for everything. Everything's going to be free. What if there was a candidate that just went out and says, hey, this government stuff, you know, elect me, but I'm just going to tell you, stop paying your taxes. Stop making your car payment. Stop making your mortgage payment. Stop making your insurance payment. Don't worry about anything. When you go to the grocery store, just take the food you need and go home with it. You know, not a problem. What if there was a candidate like that? How far would that fly? Well, you wouldn't get on the ballot. You wouldn't get a lot of money for the pack, your pack. There's nobody that's going to support this financially, so you can buy all the spiffy ads you would need to become president. No, being a true Christian would not be a good platform for, you know, for becoming president. But at any rate, so the control always seems to want to, as for the people, it wants to move back to self-control or very minimal amount of government or very local control. And so that's the whole principle of the sheriff, in fact, and the whole fact the whole Constitution of the United States is designed around. I'm not talking about people being elected for president today and what their platform is. I'm talking about the original Constitution was about the individual, and it prevented taxation. It was against the law, against the Constitution, to tax individuals, because the idea was that you got to keep what you earned. Nobody should take that from you. And the original taxes were based on import taxes, basically, on import taxes for goods that came into the country. And that's what the revenue for the federal government was supposed to be. And now it's turned around into this gigantic monster. And, you know, nobody even really knows what it does or how they... Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But anyway, I'm going to diverge into... just let me complete the thought on the Alberta going independent, Saskatchewan, other states like Illinois trying to get Chicago to become an independent state, carbon taxes from the federal government of Canada and being basically shunned by the western provinces. But all of this comes down to the same issue, that individuals and individuals in small localities, in the municipalities, etc., don't want the bigger government telling them what to do. And it's supposed to be the other way around. And the U.S. Constitution is the same. It only defines a certain set of things that the federal government can do. And after that, it can't do anything. And after that, everything is left to the state. But also, in the state, the situation is the same. It has certain things that it is specifically designated to do. And other than that, it can't do anything. So then everything is deferred to the county. And there again, the county to the municipality to the individual. So they can't pass things at the federal level that impinge on your right as a citizen, because you have power over the government, not vice versa. But anyway, I saw an interesting... I want to comment also on the comedians. There's a guy, I saw some of these videos, a guy impersonating Trump and a guy versus, there's a debate. It's At Midnight is the channel. Very funny. And Bernie is the other candidate. So they're now melding the Bernie-Trump debate into this comedy routine. It is hugely funny. It is much better than watching the real debates. I would watch one of these fake debates with the comedians all night long. I was laughing out loud. It was so funny. So I urge you, look at this. It's at, this at symbol, At Midnight is, and it's the debate between their character Donald Trump and their character Bernie Sanders. Very funny. Check that out. But in reality, if Bernie wins, here's what I see as the scenario. I might be wrong. But if Bernie wins, what if he won the presidency by however, who knows what mechanism, but say he won the presidency, then you would have people like the Ocasio-Cortez chick being Secretary of State. Oh, my goodness. Or these other, like the squad, they would all have high cabinet positions. It would just be a floundering, I mean, it would just be the most giant mess that you ever saw. You would be back in the Paris Climate Accord. You would have $60 trillion of three-blade wind turbines and solar panels paving the entire country. And then in 10 years, they would find out, well, this stuff doesn't work. Well, by then, Bernie's dead, and the other people are, who knows? Anyway, this would, but here is the clincher. Would the Democratic Party cheat for Bernie? Or is this Hillary's shoe-in? That Bernie wins he's up there, he's almost got the nomination, and then everybody says, the Democrats go, we can't let this happen. We need Hillary. Where is Hillary to come in and save the day? Because Bernie, nobody in the Democratic Party, other than a few Democratic or a few Bernie supporters, nobody wants Bernie. So would that be the gate opening for Hillary Clinton to walk in and take the nomination after all of the other people have been befuddled along the wayside? And that's what I call Lucy pulling the football. Every fall, Charlie Brown, the comic strip, Lucy puts the football down and she promises, Charlie, this year I will not pull the football out. Promise. And they go through this whole routine and then Charlie comes up and he's going to kick the football and she pulls it out. She pulls the football out and Charlie swings and, you know, misses. So anyway, that's what I'm predicting is going to happen, is that Hillary will come riding in on a white horse with a white hat, with a white pantsuit at the last minute to take the nomination, and the Democrats will be relieved, and then she will, I mean, this is what my prediction is. Oh, I might be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But anyway, I'm going to talk just a little bit about your birthright to the stars. Now, along with this idea of individualism, we're always caught up in this concept that to go into space, you need this massive government program with massive amounts of money and massive amounts of engineers and business people and massive amounts of subcontractors and all the money that goes with it to have a space program. And that's simply not the case. But the whole reason for that, the whole reason for this massive government-sponsored space program is to give you the illusion that it's very difficult to go into outer space. And it's really not. It's really not that difficult. It's not, you know, 70 years and hundreds of billions of dollars worth of contracts. It's not that difficult. It's difficult by the average. It's more difficult than riding a bicycle. A lot more difficult. And actually, it's trillions and trillions of dollars in the space program going nowhere. There's a great video out. It says, you might find this on YouTube, it's called NASA Going Nowhere. And it goes through all the presidential edicts and a very interesting compilation saying exactly what I'm saying, but it takes the very interesting perspective of looking at what presidents have done throughout history, starting out with Eisenhower, with the space program and the Kennedy era and then the Nixon era, you know, and it's really a bizarre quirk of history there where Nixon ran against Kennedy in the election and lost, but was president when the Kennedy space program came to fruition. So, you know, I don't know. World is pretty strange these days. So anyway, I'm mixing some of these topics together. But back to the idea of the coronavirus. Right now, you're receiving a tremendous amount of what we call fear porn. And fear porn is taking something and either politicizing it or creating massive amounts of fear where there should not be any. And throwing massive amounts of government money at something only creates bureaucracy. It does not solve anything. It does not send money to the places where it's needed. And so anyway, right now you're seeing a tremendous amount of fear porn over the coronavirus. Is it something you should be aware of? Yes. You better be very thankful that you had Trump as president who slammed the door on travel immediately. Otherwise, you know, and I got to get a kick out of Liz Warren. She always comes up with the opposite thing that would cure something. She's saying, stop building the border wall and put that money into coronavirus research. Well, if you stop building the wall and you open up the borders to anybody to come into this country that wants to, then you're going to guarantee that the coronavirus will become a pandemic in the United States. You will guarantee it. So, I mean, these Disdain people, you know, like I said on a couple of shows ago, don't elect a university professor to be president. They've never lived in the real world. They have no concept of things. And they, you know, they can throw their arm up and say something. They can get away with that in a classroom where there's a bunch of young, impressionable college students sitting there. And I want to tell a little story about my days in college. I don't know if I've mentioned this one on the air, but I was teaching, I'll give a couple examples. I was teaching a class, and I noticed that the students were just writing down whatever it was, and they were getting good at getting A's by regurgitating what I said. And of course, there's a lesson plan, and you're following a book, etc. So I came in one day and I said, look, we're going to diverge a little bit from the textbook. And at the end of this class, there's going to be a quiz. And you're going to be quizzed on today's lesson. So I came in and I gave them, mixed in with some information that was correct, I mixed in a lot of really just outrageously bogus information that could not possibly be true. And that anybody with half a brain would have been able to detect that this is just not correct. And so at the end of the class, I gave the quiz, and the students wrote down everything exactly like I said it. And the next day they came in, and I gave them their grades, and I gave them F's, 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 F's. And one kid got a C because at the end he made a note. He says, there's something wrong here. I didn't want to raise my hand and say anything because he didn't want to be ostracized by the other students or think that he was somehow opposing the professor, you know. And they came in and they said, but we wrote down exactly what you said. I said, that's the problem. You didn't think. And they were outraged. They said, well, you taught us incorrect information. I said, no. Most of what you learn in college is incorrect information, and you write it down and you repeat it every day. So today we're going to have another lecture, and I'm going to give you some information, and you're going to have to decide what's true and what's false. And they were scared to death because it wasn't just repeating what I said. They had to actually think. They were petrified of the concept that they had to think. And I'll just diverge a little bit here also. Let's take something like the three-blade wind turbine or solar panels, which don't work. I mean, they're a terrible solution to the energy issue. Neither one of them are solutions, and people are starting to figure this out. For 30 reasons, not one or two, but for 20 or 30 reasons, these are not good solutions. They're not economical. They're not recyclable. They're not green. I mean, 100 reasons. But anyway, I had a fellow physicist talking to me one day, looking at what I'm doing and with the wing generator, etc. And he said, how could tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of engineers go through school, learn this? Many of them end up working in industry in this alternative energy field. We're working for General Electric or Siemens or Vesta or any of the other big companies, and this stuff doesn't work. And how could these people all go through this and not, you know, nobody raises even their little finger and say, you know, this stuff doesn't work. What are you doing selling this, you know, and getting government subsidies? And yeah, Warren Buffett is the only guy that was honest. He said that he doubled his wealth one year from $2 to $4 billion simply on government subsidies, because you get the government subsidy up front, and that's why he was in all these big installations that Berkshire Hathaway has put in relative to alternative energy. They've gained billions of dollars in government subsidies, and they get that right away. And so that's why they're in it. And Warren Buffett goes, he said, this stuff doesn't work. None of it. It's just sitting out there idle. He said, we were only in it for the subsidies, and as soon as we got that, they sold off the the installations to some other third party and made another profit on the way out. And that's what they did. It was a business deal based on government subsidies. It had nothing to do with real business, or for sure it had nothing to do with solving the world energy problem. So you have 100,000 of these things sitting out there that don't work, that never spin, that need a motor to get them started spinning, and they're not recyclable. Have you ever seen a recycle site for three-blade wind turbines? It's pretty gross. They cut them into sections, and then they bury them. They just dig a big hole and bury them with dirt. It's not much dirt either, like a few feet under. And these things are going to be decaying for the next, oh, who knows, 100,000 years probably before those things break down and all those chemicals leach into the environment. Oh, my God, what a disaster. But anyway, the point is that people don't think. And, okay, so I'm going to jump back to the coronavirus. And what should your attitude be? Well, you should be very careful. If somebody is around you and they're coughing or sneezing or, a lot of people sneeze right into the air, you know, say, no, put your hand up and then go wash your hands. If you're any place and you touch stuff, which you're constantly doing, you don't even notice it, countertops, somebody hands you some change, you have to, you know, you put your credit card in something, you got to click something, you got to grab that pin that 1,000 other people have grabbed that same day. You know, you're constantly touching stuff. So don't touch your mouth, nose, ears, or eyes. Those are the entry points for viruses, the main entry points in your into your body. So don't touch your hands or your face, etc. You could even wear gloves. And then when you get in your car, take off your gloves. The other thing is, as soon as you get into your house, wash your hands. Everybody go straight to the sink, wash your hands, take your shoes off at the door. And then if you've been in some place like an airport or a public place, public transportation, whatever it is, take your clothes and put them aside and just leave them there for a day or wash them, throw them in the laundry. Because a flu virus or any kind of virus can live up to a day or more, possibly, on your clothes. And then you touch it, etc. So there are some things you can do to prevent transmission. And just being around people who are coughing, or if they look sick, they look at their eyes and their eyes are all red and they're kind of like, I got the flu look in the face. Stay away from them. Because, yeah, just breathing within a couple foot circle, they're breathing that virus out in the air. You know, so anyway, do you have to be fearful? And, I understand that in, say, Chinatown, say in San Francisco, all of the Chinese restaurants are closing. You know, nobody's going there because everybody's afraid the Chinese flu. But is that racist? Is it racist to be a little bit concerned about your health, about getting something that potentially could kill you? And if you look at it, statistically, yes, it's about the same death rate as the flu. But if you get the flu, let's just compare the flu. Say you get the flu and say you get the coronavirus. What are the symptoms? Which one is worse? Well, the flu is no joyride. We've all had that, and it's not fun. But the coronavirus is a respiratory disease, and the reason people die is they basically choke to death coughing. That is the issue, and that's with SARS also. It's a variety of SARS. It's a military-grade laboratory virus created from the SARS virus. That's what this novel coronavirus is. And nobody wants to say that. All of these so-called health professionals won't admit that that's what this is. That's what it is. It's SARS and MERS, and this are all laboratory viruses created by your tax dollars. Yes, and the American scientists were going to that level 4 bio lab in China, in Wuhan. They were going there and helping out. So we don't know who dropped this baby. The other thing that you should be worried about is that someone would drop this and take it out and drop it in the middle of some, say, busy American city in a vial or something like that. And, you know, there's some wackos working for the government in these bio labs. These are not normal people. I mean, if you ever met some of these people, they're pretty wacko. And, you know, have some, you know, pretty bizarre attitudes and pretty bizarre, they're just bizarre people, you know. These are people that went up through the ranks, through university, graduate school, and then off into some secret government lab. You know, you're not dealing with your average guy down the street that's a car mechanic or works in, you know, some blue-collar job. No, these people, I'll tell you, I've met a lot of them, and there's some of them can be normal, but there's a lot of them that are wacko. That's the only thing I can tell you, and they're working in these laboratories. And, of course, there's safeguards against that kind of thing. But then you have inside the CIA and other places, they want to disrupt the president. And, you know, these people will do anything because they're not doing well on an international level. So there are things to be concerned about. And if you just look at the natural spread of this virus, they have now found one case in apparently in California, and they don't know where the guy got it from. I don't know if it's a man or a woman, but they don't know where. This person was not traveling, was not in any other place where there were, you know, tourists or cruise boats or anything like that. So they don't know how this one person picked it up. So anyway, you know, is there something to be concerned about? Yes. If you're very careful, then you should probably be okay. But also they're trying to use this to weaponize against the economy. And that's something that the Democrats would love to do, is to drive down the economy so that then they can blame it on Trump. And that's clear and simple. That's what's going on. So there are a number of concerns here, and one of the biggest concerns for the average person is not getting the virus, but the economic and socio-political consequences of people trying to weaponize it. Okay, so anyway, just be careful, as I said before. Don't take the kids shopping. If you got little kids or something like that, find a way that one of the parents stays, or you know, somebody stays with the kids while you go shopping. And you go in the store, get your business done, and get out of there. Don't lollygag in the grocery store. Go at off-peak times when there's fewer people. And, you know, just when you get home, wash your hands good, and also make sure you process any food, you cook any food good. I would say for the time being, try and avoid eating raw foods because you don't know who's been touching them, etc. So that's just my 2 cents worth on that. Okay, now I just mentioned briefly your birthright to the stars. This is something that everybody should be conscious of. And in today's political world where you have political debates and you have other things going on, this is never, ever mentioned, and there's a reason for that. It's that all of this other stuff going on is a diversion. It's a diversion to keep you from focusing on what you really should be doing. Look at the inordinate amount of time that we spend individually and collectively as a nation, for example, or just look at other nations. We spend an absolute inordinate amount of time doing things that really don't matter. And we hardly spend any time doing things that really do matter. So take that for what it's worth. Okay, now, being a mathematician, and I've talked about this in, for example, in terms of energy, I took an example of a hot dog. You go to a big baseball game or a football game or something and you buy a hot dog. Okay, well, that a hot dog is going to be about, let's just say, $8. Now, why does a hot dog cost $8? Well, clearly, you got a stadium, you got a guy running up and down the stairs selling these, and he's got to get paid. And then you break this down, that where was that hot dog? Where did it go? It was at the meat processing plant, then it had to be trucked over to the stadium. That's gas, that's transportation, that's all added in. Somebody had to pay that. So they got to make that money back plus a profit. And all of these people in there have to make profit. But they all pay energy. And if you look at anything that happens, if you buy gasoline, it took transportation to get there. It took energy to get that energy to where you end up buying it. And so energy is the cost. And if you broke down that hot dog all the way back to the little pig sitting in the farmer's lot and the food that the pig ate and the energy necessary to dry the corn or the grain or the feed for the pig, and move it to the farmer's location, that took transportation. Somebody had to have paper bags, made these big paper bags that the feed comes in. Somebody had to make the paper at a mill. That took energy. You know, break this thing down into all its components, and there would be a big job to do that. But all of these components require energy. So if you look in the 1800s, energy was not a cost. It was not a factor in the cost of anything because energy wasn't available. There was no electricity. There was no natural gas or propane in tanks. People cut down a tree with a handsaw and they burned trees and wood, and coal was actually starting out as a common form of energy to heat houses, etc. But there was not a big expense to it. It was not what you'd call a major expense. Railroads used coal to fire the engines, the steam engines, and so that's where transportation and coal and energy actually started to become a financial factor. But back to the $8 hot dog. What if, now, on top of all of the energy costs in there, and I would venture to say that when you get done, at the end of the day, about 95% of the cost of that hot dog goes back to energy. And so the person that goes home, they rent their apartment, it took energy to make the blocks and build the building that they're in, or cut the wood and dry the wood. And, you know, energy, energy, energy. Energy is in everything. Everything. And so what now if you put a carbon tax on energy? Well, it sounds like a doggone, like a green thing to do. But what is that? First of all, what is that carbon tax going to do? Is that going to cure the problem? No, it just gives government a different way to tax you. But what does it do to the overall cost of things? Now, for a guy with a lot of money going to the baseball game, he probably paid $50 a seat for his ticket. So an $8 hot dog is not a big deal. You know, something to drink, a hot dog, you know, watch the game. So that's not a big deal. But a guy with a medium or lower income, that $8 hot dog is like, no, $8 could feed my whole family. If I bought a nice roast and or some chicken and some potatoes, and $8 could feed the whole family. And so it's a different thing for a person. Now, what if you add a carbon tax in there that's significant? Then that puts a percentage. Now, let's go back again to all the way back to the beginning of the hot dog with the little pig on the farm eating. Okay, the bag that the feed comes in, that's going to go up some because of the carbon tax. The grain itself, drying it, that's going to go up. Every piece of this equation of energy is going to bump up by a little. So it's compounded and compounded. It's what you call compound interest. It's interest paid on interest paid on interest. So now that each step, if you take, and let's say you raise 1% the cost of energy, sounds like, 1% is not a big deal. But now, okay, now at the next step, you can have 1% added on top of that again. And then 1% and 1%. Okay, now, after you get through about 1,000 iterations of this to get out to the hot dog, where you actually got the hot dog and the bun in your hand and putting the mustard on there and you're about ready to stick it in your mouth, that's the end of the life of the hot dog. And actually not, because there are actually some expenses in energy after the eating of the hot dog. But I won't go there. But this incremental compounded cost goes into everything. So how much does the hot dog price go up because you put, say, a 1%, which tax for a carbon tax on something, how much does the price of things go up? Well, it's incremental and compounded. And so it goes up a lot. And so who does it affect? The guy that's paying $50 a seat for his sporting goods, for a sporting event, and he's got plenty of money and it's not a big deal, it doesn't affect him at all. But it affects the little guy, the guy that's working for a living, and everything that average guy in the street does has energy involved in it. And that's a major, that's where all of his money goes, for heating the house, driving to work, getting an automobile, buying food. All of this is an expense. And that compounded energy tax, carbon tax, is woven into it. So when politicians come along and want to put a carbon tax on something, it sounds really green. It sounds like their intentions are there. But where's that money going to go? What's it really going to do? Is it going to cure the... Are you going to use less energy? Are you going to eat less? Are you going to buy less food for your family? Well, it turns out that, yeah, you're going to get less for your money when you go to the grocery store or put the gasoline in your automobile or whatever. And not by just a little bit, but by a lot. And the government, now, this is the other thing. You think, oh, they're getting just 1%. No, they're getting a carbon tax off of every step along the way. Let's take just one example. The truck that drove the hot dog from the middleman that's selling hot dogs, he buys them from the warehouse. The warehouse buys them from the meatpacking plant. And then somebody has to drive from the distributor over to the stadium to deliver it. Okay, the gasoline that's used or the energy that's used, whatever, it's electric vehicle, then you're producing that electricity at a coal or nuclear-fired power plant. That energy is taxed. And so the government is getting 1%, 1%, 1% off of all of these pieces. They should only be able to tax it once. But the beauty of a carbon tax on top of energy is that it's everywhere. It's thousands of pieces in that little particular hot dog. So now you understand why carbon tax is such a divisive tax, because it's hidden in everything thousands of times. Not once, not hundreds of times, but literally thousands of times, because everything we do requires energy. And so this is why, for example, with the wing generator, my goal is to reduce the cost of energy to another insignificant level, just like we had in the 1800s. And also, the cost of energy should go way down, so the standard of living should go up. Because really, if you're paying for a lot of money for oil, nuclear, natural gas, or any other form of energy, coal, whatever it is, that money is like going into a black hole. It does not come back to the economy. It's being sucked out of the economy in a big way constantly. And it doesn't make the hot dog any better. Is the hot dog better because you used a lot of energy to produce it and move it and do everything that has to happen to get that hot dog into your hand? Well, of course not. Because you're paying this immense cost of energy in the year 2020, the quality of life is going down. And now the government wants to put a carbon tax on top of that. It's a recurring compound tax. And so, you know, it's as green as you might feel about this, it's really a bad idea. It's a very bad idea because it affects the lowest income people in a big way. And it really doesn't solve the issue. It does not solve the problem. Okay, just a comment. I mentioned earlier that I'm now selling the undersink. Well, I've always been selling the undersink and the above sink water filters. And the whole house filters, of course, the MR5s and MR7s. And the issue with the stainless steel containers for the gravity feed water filters, you're going to find that all of the companies that sell these are going to be out of stock. They're not going to be able to fill their orders. And so I still have the Traveler. I said, as I said, that's the slightly smaller stainless steel. So if you still want a stainless steel container, gravity feed water filter, we have the Travelers, but the full size, which is not much bigger, it's a 1 inch taller and a half inch less in diameter, so almost the same size, almost the same capacity. The kitchen, what I call the kitchen standard, is no longer available on my webpage. And so, and we are substituting those right now for people that have made orders, but if you go to my webpage now, the full-size kitchen standard water filter is simply not there anymore. But what I'm trying to encourage people to do also, say you have company that comes over, or say, the family is doing the kids are at school and the mom and dad are working and stuff, but then you come home on the weekend, a lot of times that gravity feed water filter is not enough. You can never put enough water in it to keep it filled so that everybody has a fresh glass of water that's filtered to drink. So the inline filters are much better in that respect, in that you go to the sink, and no matter how much you use it, it's going to still have filtered water for cooking, for washing, for doing sprouts, for washing food, etc. A lot of times a gravity water filter is just not enough for the average family. So anyway, I'm promoting the whole house water filter, so you're not showering, and when you jump in that hot shower, the steam, you're breathing it in, it's going in your skin, all those chemicals, and that's my estimation of where the cancer rate is jumping in the United States. And these little shower heads that you buy in the big box store, they don't work. They're good for about 20 gallons, and that's it. So you need a real commercial-grade whole house water system to filter water for your house. And go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.